Thanks for sticking around. I'm Ian Hoke on WWL. Scoot will be back very soon. Thank you all for your concern. He's fine. We expect him back soon, and he'll tell you all about where he's been. I got a lot of text messages I'm going to read. I got a lot of calls I'm going to get to. In just a few minutes, Coleman will do the news bomb. Oh, you know, I didn't really get a chance to say hello to you because we had to start out with Professor Sulzer. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How about you, Ian?
I'm doing great. You know, I was in New Hampshire. That's where I've been.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was up in the Granite State. My girlfriend, her father had a retirement party, and I went out there to meet all the extended family and everything and look at the leaves changing color. But we got up there too early. All the leaves were just green.
Oh.
I mean, that's the whole point of going to New Hampshire in the fall.
I don't mean to make you feel bad, but my mom had a graduation party last week as well, but I was doing a Scoot show.
Oh, no.
I had to. She sent me videos while I was, you know, while I was filling in
whack.
For the show.
Why didn't you tell me?
Y'all needed me. So,
yeah, you know, I guess we did.
But she's in Mississippi now. She's doing her thing, still second line and stuff, because now she's finally out of the workforce.
That's great. I'm happy for her. That's great. Yeah, I got to go see a Red Sox game at Fenway Park. That was pretty cool. I'd never been to Fenway before. And went to an apple orchard, and we picked some apples, and went and did a corn maze with the kids. Well, I say it was with the kids. There were kids there, but it was my idea. You ever done a corn maze?
I'm guessing it's like one of those mazes that you see on TV, but instead of shrubbery, there's corn stalks.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like a cornfield, and they carve a little labyrinth out of it, and you got to go find your way through the corn maze.
I wonder if the mortuary could do that with candy corn, like make a bunch of make a candy corn maze that you have to get through.
Like the little tiny candy corns?
Yeah, you know when you stack them up, that actually makes the shape of a corn. That's why they're called candy corn.
Yeah.
So maybe if they could probably like make a paper mache version of the candy corn and make it like a little candy corn maze in a mortuary that you have to get through.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm talking to the mortuary guy in a couple hours. I'll ask him that. Thank you so much, Coleman. Always doing a great job. All right, we are going to do the news bomb in just a second. I'm going to tuck in a phone call here. Let's go to Julian Metairie. Welcome to the show, Julie. Nice to see you. Well, hear from you.
Hello.
Hi. Welcome back.
Hi. I just want to make a couple of comments. I realize what people believe is what people believe, but from what I understand, to say that there's no fraud in elections is absolutely ridiculous when on the news they have convicted people, this woman and three others convicted, Democrats, convicted of tampering, depositing stacks of absentee ballots into drop boxes. I personally saw it on TV, a camera that was behind one of the places where people went to go vote. After it was closed, they didn't realize this school camera was still on, and a truck pulls up with boxes and boxes of ballots. So how can people say there's no fraud?
Well, let's make a couple things here clear. There is fraud. There is fraud in every election. It's tiny fraud, Jewel. I mean, we're talking about like a couple people, and it's not just Democrats. There are Republicans, including Republican officials, election officials that have been found guilty of voter fraud quite recently. I think the woman in Colorado, Tina Peters, who is the Republican election administrator in her county in Colorado, she's going on trial today for tampering with, voting machines. Well, so there, let me just get, I'll finish this thought. I'll give it right back to you, Julie.
Yeah, I just have one more question for you. And then, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, so there is fraud, but there isn't enough fraud to sway elections. Certainly not the 2020 election. If that were true, certainly we would have found evidence of it by now. And it would have been good enough evidence that it would have made it into the legal system at some point. Right. But it hasn't. So if you say you saw somebody on TV filling up, you know, an absentee ballot box, if that is what you allege it is, and it is what the people on television are telling you that it is, then, yeah, people should be prosecuted for that. But they haven't been. So we're left to conclude that what you saw in that video is not what you believe is in that video. Right.
Well, why do you think that the Democrats don't want to pass the bill that you need ID to cast a vote? They don't want to have anything to do with that. Why is that, you think?
Why don't Democrats want voter ID?
Yeah, why they don't pass the bill? The Republicans are trying to pass
the bill.
Oh,
you mean this one?
Saying that, and this, Yeah, in this election, they have to have ID, photo ID, and to prove who they are, and they don't want to do it. Why do you think?
Well, I don't know, Julie. It's kind of complicated, you know, because that was attached to a spending bill. And I think that people are not fans of, like, putting a... you got to vote for this spending bill with a gun to your head. I think they just wanted a clean bill, and that's what they got. And it wasn't just the Democrats that didn't go along with that. I mean, there were plenty of Republicans in Congress that also said, let's just pass the continuing resolution and deal with this at another time. So there are there are political considerations that they make, and whether or not you think that's fair or appropriate, we can have that conversation. But if you say, oh, well, this individual didn't vote for this bill, it's not always because they don't agree with what's in it. They don't agree with the way it was presented. Same reason the Republicans in the Senate just voted to not guarantee the right to in vitro fertilization. They all say that they support that, but they didn't want to do it in that particular way, right?
Okay. I guess it's the same thing like this bill that they wanted to pass that would close the border, but they don't want to mention all the other stuff that goes with it. And that's why that wasn't passed. Because it wasn't really closing the border. They were still going to let 5,000 in every day or every week. All these other little things that went with it. But all they want to talk about is they put a bill there and Trump told them not to sign it. So, you know, but they won't mention that part in that. But you'll mention it about...
No, I mean, people mention that all the time. They just... Tim Walz mentioned that in the debate the other night. We had the closest thing we had to a legislative solution to the border crisis was this bipartisan Senate bill that was written by James Lankford, one of the most conservative senators. And everyone expected this bill to pass until Trump came out against it and said, no, you can't do that because A, B, C, D, E, and F. And now we don't have that. And who knows when we'll get that chance again.
Well, but the thing is, she can Biden or Kamala could sign one piece of paper and close the border like that.
That's not the way to do it. No, they don't want to do that, Julie, because the reason they don't want to do that is because then the next person can undo that. What everybody wants here is a legislative solution, not an executive order, a legislative package that has, you know, systems in place that will outlast one administration. That's the thing that everybody wants. And that's what that Lankford Senate bill was. Oh, well, okay. You know, I'm
not me. I just want them to close the border.
I don't blame you for that, Julie.
I just want them to close the border.
Yeah, well, you know, if wishes and buts. Julie, I got to stop here, but nice speaking with you as always. Coleman, you ready? Let's do the news bomb. Ow! Good Lord. Things too close. Federal prosecutors are arguing that Donald Trump is not entitled to immunity from prosecution over his bid to overturn his 2020 election laws.
In a court filing, they say Trump resorted to crimes after losing the race to Joe Biden. The filing by special counsel Jack Smith's team comes after a Supreme Court opinion that gave broad immunity to former presidents for official acts taken while in office. Smith's prosecutors hope to convince federal judge Tanya Chutkin that the charges against Trump are private, not official, and they should remain part of the indictment against him going forward. Sagar Magani, Washington.
Yeah, you probably would have guessed this. Donald Trump is not taking this news very well.
We are receiving a very angry reaction from Donald Trump and his campaign. They are calling the filing unconstitutional. In part because it's being released so close to the election. Trump is, in fact, attempting to tie it to the immediate aftermath of the vice presidential debate, where he says his running mate, J.D. Vance, did so well in this effort to undermine his campaign. There's no evidence of any connection between the two, but Trump is repeating his claims that this is a witch hunt, and he is saying that he will prevail in this case and that he will do so in all the other criminal cases he faces.
It's a tale as old as time. All right. Well, Trump and Harris are both reaching out to moderate voters in those Midwestern blue wall battleground states.
After visiting with hurricane victims, the two major presidential candidates are back on the campaign trail. Former President Donald Trump visits a state college in Saginaw in a swing area of Michigan that Joe Biden barely won 4 years ago. In Wisconsin on Tuesday, Trump blamed weak leadership by the Biden-Harris administration for the crises in Ukraine and the Middle East.
The so-called enemy doesn't respect our country any longer.
Vice President Kamala Harris is appearing in Ripon, Wisconsin. The town is home to the Little White Schoolhouse, where an 1854 meeting led to the formation of the Republican Republican Party. She's campaigning with former Wyoming Representative Liz Cheney, one of Trump's fiercest Republican opponents, in an event designed to reach moderate voters. At Duke University in early September, Cheney said she and her father, Dick Cheney, would both support the Democratic nominee.
Because of the danger that Donald Trump poses, not only am I not voting for Donald Trump, but I will be voting for Kamala Harris.
On Friday, Harris is planning a rally in Flint, Michigan. Jennifer King, Washington.
This is so weird. It was kind of weird when Liz Cheney came out and said, "Hey, I'm endorsing Harris." Also, my dad, Dick Cheney, former vice president, is also endorsing Harris. But now that they're actually out there campaigning for Harris, that is wild stuff. Republican VP nominee Senator J.D. Vance says that Donald Trump is right to continue calling out problems with immigrants in Springfield, Ohio.
The fundamental issue here is whether they were eating geese or dogs. Is that really what we're going to hang our hat on? The problem is that this small town in Ohio has been flooded with 20,000 migrants thanks to Kamala Harris's policies. Now, people can't afford basic goods. They can't afford food. They can't afford housing in their communities, and their public safety has been completely destroyed. It's a disgrace.
They can't afford food because there's too many migrants? That doesn't really hold up. And look, we talked about this a little bit last week. You know, Springfield, Ohio, yeah, they got some issues because they got more people than they got services. And I don't really know who to blame for that, but it's not the migrants. So the fact that J.D. Vance is out here trying to move the goalposts and say, "Well, it's not about the geese and the ducks." Yes, it is, dude. You're the one who made it about the geese and the ducks. If it was about people not being able to afford groceries because they have too many neighbors, which sounds insane, then you should have just said that. But instead, you sucked up all this oxygen and made yourself look like an idiot for making it about the geese and the ducks. President Biden is getting pressure to suspend that dock workers' strike.
The dock workers' strike has shut down 36 ports from Maine to Texas, even as people and governments work to rush supplies to communities across the southeast, cut off and ravaged by Hurricane Helene.
The last thing we need on top of that is a man-made disaster.
President Biden Wednesday on his way to survey the damage.
We're hearing from the folks regionally that they're having trouble getting product they need because of the port strike.
Some businesses and politicians are urging the president to invoke a 1947 law, the Taft-Hartley Act, to seek a court-ordered 80-day cooling-off period for companies and unions to try to resolve their differences. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis in sound from WTVT.
The federal government should be doing all they can to make sure all the supplies continue to come in here.
But Biden has said he won't intervene and noted the companies controlling eastern Gulf Coast ports have made huge profits since the pandemic.
Time for them to sit at the table and get this strike done.
Ben Thomas, Washington.
I don't have huge feelings about the strike either way. I support people's right to strike. I understand it also is pretty disruptive. You know, if it goes on for too long, it's going to hurt the economy. Some things might be hard to get or become more expensive. But we don't need to be panic buying water and toilet paper. You hear that at the top of the hour news. People are out here freaking out like it's COVID all over again. So naturally, on my way into work, I picked up a case of scotch. Biden does not expect an imminent response from Israel to Iran's missile strikes earlier this week.
President Biden says he does not expect Israel to retaliate immediately for Tuesday's missile strikes by Iran. The ballistic missile barrage has raised concerns about a growing Mideast fight and America's role in defending Israel. Asked at the White House if the U.S. will allow Israel to fight back.
First of all, we don't allow Israel. We advise Israel, and there's nothing going to happen today. We'll talk about that later.
Israel has vowed a painful response to Tehran. Sagar Magani, Washington.
And turning now to domestic issues. After Hurricane Helene left millions without electricity, water, and phone service, residents in North Carolina are relying on some old-fashioned ways to cope.
In Hendersonville, North Carolina, First Baptist Church minister Eric Williamson.
So, do you need anything else, though?
I don't know.
Was making the rounds to check on some of the most vulnerable members of his congregation.
Bringing them food and water, but also just bringing them a smile and a prayer with them just to give them comfort.
Minister Williamson wanted to make sure that this 86-year-old knew to boil water.
Anderson, I mean, a
video shared by the Cajun Navy 2016 shows the Mountain Mule Packer Ranch team. A local business that specializes in assembling packages on pack animals. Delivering supplies to residents stuck on Black Mountain, North Carolina. This delivery.
Now, what do you need from me to do? To dump it into something?
Yeah, if you don't mind.
Brought ice to a resident so he could refrigerate his insulin.
You know what, though? We got that ice for you.
I'm Lisa Dwyer.
Yeah, we know all about that. Always look for the helpers. Further down south, communities in Florida's Big Bend are grappling with the future after their third hurricane in just 13 months.
Locals in Florida's low-lying Big Bend region are trying to decide how to move forward after a direct hit from Hurricane Helene.
Idalia, Debbie, this compounds all of that.
Deagle Beach native Hud Lilliott and his wife Lori hope to rebuild their canal front home.
So the door was here.
Right here.
A month ago, Brooke Hires and her husband moved from a state-issued trailer where they had lived since Hurricane Idalia. Helene swept their nearly finished house in Horseshoe Bend off of its pilings.
Catastrophic, devastating, heartbreaking, to this magnitude. None of that explains what happened here.
The destruction is testing the resilience of residents who are living in an affordable area that is prone to storms.
I just got finished painting it, and you can see it down there.
Dave Beamer rebuilt in Steinhatchee after Idalia, only to see his house washed into the marsh. Beamer plans to build a pole barn and park a camper underneath.
And now it's time to go back to work, and let's get her done.
I'm Jennifer King.
Up in North Carolina, Chimney Rock is one of those mountain towns that was completely destroyed. There is not one single structure in Chimney Rock, North Carolina, that was untouched by those floodwaters. But Chimney Rock volunteer firefighter John Payne says they're not going to give up easily.
These people are as strong as the mountain.
Go ahead, yep. Lakeway Station.
You can't run us out that easy. Yep. They tried to burn us out years ago when we had the big fire. We came back from it. We came back from the 96 flood. We came back from the 93 blizzard. This is a big one, don't get me wrong, but we will be here, we will be back, we will bounce back.
Love to hear that kind of resilience from those people. When we come back, I'll be taking more of your phone calls. I see Wayne, Mike, James. We'll get to you guys in just a minute. If you're on hold, stay there. I'll try and get to you as fast as I can. If you want to react to anything you heard from me or during the News Bomb or any other time, get in touch on the Okernard Jewelers Talking Text Line. That number is 504-260-1870. I'm Ian Hoken for Scoot. Be right back after this. On the Okernard Jewelers Talking Text Line about the dock workers strike, here's a text that says, wait for it. Biden will only invoke Taft-Hartley once the election results are in. The Dems cannot afford to upset the unions right before a presidential election. Yeah, I don't think that you're wrong. I really don't. It's certainly true that just from a strict political consideration, you don't want to hack off all those union voters, you know, with less than a month to go before the election. But at the same time, like, something's got to give. This strike can't go on forever. And if they don't, you know, reach some middle ground in their negotiations, I don't know. I don't see what option Joe Biden would have but to invoke the Taft-Hartley Act. More of your texts coming up. Let's take care of some phone calls here. Let's go to line two where we find Wayne. Wayne, good afternoon. You're on WWL.
Hi. I've learned over the years you're a fair person. I always listen to the show.
Thanks, man.
I always tell Scoot he came to Chalmette High 40-something years ago with Captain Humble.
Right.
And that was the first time I met him. And that almost
cool.
Says his age. But what I'm calling about is the terrible disaster that hit in Georgia, South Carolina, and all that. And in the news that came out this morning that old people can't get their oxygen, other people can't get the insulin and things like that. And FEMA came out and said, we're sorry, we diverted $300 billion to the illegal immigration, and we don't have any money for these people. It's like, they should never be without. We were so lucky when Katrina hit, they helped us. Then they gave a couple $1,000s to each family. Kamala Harris said she was going to get $750 to the people each, $750. Wait, you can't even buy a generator with that. But what I'm saying is they're not sending anything right now. And it's a shame that our president is on the beach this morning, sleeping in front of the cameras. If any other president was in office, they would be out there trying to help. I just don't understand that. Between politicking and that, nobody cares about the old people. You know, old people, poor people. Well, I went there two times in the last 2 years up in Tennessee, and they're all devastated. I didn't even say Tennessee, and that's really the worst one.
So
40 inches in 24 hours. You know what that would do in New Orleans?
Yeah.
Almost four foot, you know, and they're not getting any help.
Let me jump in here, Wayne, and then I'll let you respond. First of all, Joe Biden is not on the beach in Delaware today. He's actually touring the hurricane hit areas. I think he was just in Tallahassee a little bit earlier. So I'm not sure who's telling you that he's taking a nap on the beach, because, brother, he ain't. Also, I don't know what news agency or YouTube channel or whatever told you that FEMA spent $300 billion on non-disaster. FEMA's yearly budget is like $30 billion. You know, so maybe you misspoke or something, but there's just no way that doesn't make any sense. They may have spent like $300 billion over the last 10 years, but there's no way that they ran out of money this year by spending $300 billion. Not possible.
It was on the news. I mean,
news? And
I wouldn't say it's fake news or good news, all right?
Well, which one? What was it? Just for my own curiosity.
Fox.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine.
And yesterday Biden went and toured. Today he's back on the beach. I promise you, they even had on the news. He toured it. He flew over yesterday. I guess he was too old to walk, so he let Kamala walk, and she gave out some sandwiches and then left. But Biden flew over yesterday.
He's in Florida today. He's in Florida today.
They did say $300 billion was diverted from FEMA. Yeah. They allocated it to immigration, and they said now they don't have money. That's not what they said, Wayne.
They're doing everything they can to help the people from Helene now. Mayorkas came out and said FEMA is going to run out of money before the end of hurricane season. They did not say we don't have enough money to help the people who need help right now. They said our budget is not going to stretch until November 1st. People in Congress are aware of this. They got some more money in the CR. They can draw that down kind of whenever they want. So I believe that there are news agencies out there who are saying Mayorkas said they don't have any money to help people because they gave $300 billion to the immigrants. But that's not the story.
I'm just looking at the people that they're interviewing on the ground. Mm-hmm. And they said, where's the help? FEMA's not here. Nobody's helping us. And I have feelings for people. If you break your arm and I'm looking at you, I feel for your arm hurt.
Sure.
I see these people and they don't have nothing out there. And it's so sad, but yet the immigrants can walk across the border and get a check for $1,000, a free phone. If these people in the hills would have their phones, that would be cool. But, you know, maybe they should divert those free phones to the people in Tennessee and South Carolina.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to sound political.
No, that's
I'm
right.
just saying, really, this is people that have lived there their whole life. And now a storm has wiped them out. Yeah, they're not used to hurricanes. We're used to hurricanes. But it never hit them like that. 40 inches in 24 hours.
Yeah.
So it washed the bridges and everything, and they can't get to the stores. And there's no, they said they hadn't even seen a helicopter. To where I'm just saying, you know, we got enough army. And they could bring the military over there and fly in water. They've done it in Haiti and that, you know, where they drop pallets of water and things. Mm-hmm. They ought to do that to the U.S. citizens. I'm just saying they're not getting a fair shake, my friend.
I don't disagree, Wayne. I think, you know, we could say FEMA's not doing enough, and that's evergreen. You know, that could be this hurricane, that could be another hurricane, that could be one of our hurricanes, that could be a hurricane on the East Coast, or it could be wildfires or earthquakes or anything. It seems like there's always more that FEMA could be doing. And if they're not doing it right now, we should have that conversation. But I disagree that the reason they're falling short right now is because they spent too much money on immigrants. Let's go to Mike in Metairie. Mike, you're on the air. Good afternoon.
Hello?
Hi.
Hey. Hey, Ian, did you know that in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king?
I've heard that.
And Ian, you have two good eyes, and they're both seeing 20/20. And I love the way you crush these third-grade right-wingers, like that previous caller, Mike and Julie and all of them. But it's a fruitless task because what you need to say is this one thing, immortal phrase from Colonel Jessup. You can't handle the truth.
Anyway, you're damn right I gave that order.
What?
I gave out another quote from A Few Good Men. Go ahead, Mike.
Okay. anyway, I want to show the difference between trash and class. When Hillary Clinton won by 3 million votes of real Americans, he could have went to Obama and had Obama tell Joe Biden, do not certify the election, just like the way that trashy guy did. Mm-hmm. But, of course, they didn't do it because they're pure class. And that other guy who just called about the poor people that the Republicans love and that the Democrats, that he obviously is one of those blind Mr. Magoo types, because in history, the Democrats have always been for the poor, and the rich people are the Republicans.
Yeah, some pretty successful PR campaigns going on out there, huh, Mike?
Oh, yeah. The third graders are listening to Fox and Newsmax. Yeah, they're perfectly. But it doesn't help. It's fruitless. That's the way they are. They tried that in the Civil War. What happened to them then? Yeah. Same states that are voting for Trump now.
Well, Mike, I got to pause this there, but nice speaking with you. Look, in regard to, you know, what you said about how some people, you know, it's not worth our time to correct them when they say there was so much voter fraud, or Hillary Clinton also didn't concede the election, or Nancy Pelosi rejected the troops. You do definitely get to a point of diminishing returns where you can't just argue with people about that, because they're not approaching the conversation in good faith. There is no amount of calm, rational, empirical evidence that you deliver in a friendly way that's going to change their mind. But if there are other people listening to that conversation, and we know that there are, then maybe you can make some headway around the edges. You know, it's like it's not always fruitful to argue with somebody that's not going to allow their mind to be changed, but observers around you, you can reach them the same way. And then the next time they're having an argument with somebody or a discussion and something about politics needs corrections, then you have given them the tools that they need to do their own sort of truth telling.
Ian,
what
if you truly do have 20/20 vision like Mike in Metairie says? Why are you wearing those glasses? Is it like a Superman Clark Kent thing? Like you can really, really see, but you try to keep a mild mannered identity because
it's a great question. It's not Superman. It's Cyclops. I have to wear these because the optic blasts from my mutant power. You know, I'm a member. I'm one of the founding members of the X-Men, as a matter of fact. Yeah,
all right,
so I got to wear these glasses to keep my optic blast from blowing up everything in front.
That makes sense. So you have beyond 20/20 vision. You have sight beyond sight.
I got X-Men sight. But, you know, it's a blessing and a curse, as most mutant powers are. We'll come back and get more of your phone calls and texts. So coming up next. Anything you want to say about the conversation I just had with Mike or Julie or Wayne or any of those others, I'll read some more of your text messages. And then if we have time before 3 o'clock, I'm going to read a few more of these strange details from Jack Smith's report about Donald Trump's actions between Election Day of November 2020 and January 6th, 2021. I'm Ian Hoken for Scoot. I'll be right back after this. I love this song. We need plenty more. Oh, my good Lord. That's a bar song, Tipsy by Shaboozy, which is a really popular song right now. And we're learning more about Shaboozy. He's you can hear he's black. He's a rapper. He's a singer, but he's a country music artist. I love these people that are doing this genre blending stuff. I mean, I just can't get enough of it. He collaborated with Beyonce on her country music album. I expect we'll be hearing more from Shaboozy in the future. I wish he had a cooler name. Shaboozy sounds like a children's rhyme or something.
I think it's better than Shapoopy, the Family Guy song.
That's from the Music Man. Yeah, Shapoopy. Yeah, it's pretty close. The girl who's hard to get. All right, if you're on hold, stay there. I'm going to get to you in just a few moments, but I did want to read a few more of these line items from Jack Smith's new brief in that Trump election interference case. Reading now from Politico, prosecutors who had more access to telephone records and emails than the congressional committee that investigated January 6th alleged that Trump spoke to ally Steve Bannon by phone on January 5th, the day before the attack, less than 2 hours before Bannon issued a provocative prediction on his podcast that all hell is going to break loose on January 6th. Why is Steve Bannon predicting on his podcast that all hell is going to break loose right after he spoke to Donald Trump? What happened in that conversation? What did Donald Trump say to Steve Bannon that may have moved Steve Bannon to then go on his podcast a couple hours later and say, all hell is going to break loose on January 6th? Is it possible that Steve Bannon, who I'll remind you is one of Trump's advisors, was his chief of staff and campaign manager for a brief moment? He and Roger Stone, thick as thieves. And Roger Stone was out there hanging out with the Proud Boys and these Oath Keeper guys. These weren't just like regular people that flew from across the country to go see the rally. They were organized. They had a plan. They said, we are going to go with the crowd to the Capitol in combat gear with radios and everything. And we're going to tactically invade the Capitol building. That happened. It's not a stretch to think that the people who took those actions, their actions might have been known ahead of time to somebody like Steve Bannon. There's another one in here about Rudy Giuliani. It says, counting on Rudy Giuliani didn't turn out so well. Jack Smith's brief includes yet another instance of Giuliani's prolific record of butt dialing. I don't know if you know this about Rudy Giuliani, but he does have a prolific record of butt dialing people. You know, where you accidentally call somebody because you sit on your phone in just the right way. I mean, that's a tragedy when it happens to you, but when it happens to you over and over and over again, so much that reporters say you have a prolific record of butt dialing, that's tough sledding, Rudy. Prosecutors say Giuliani attempted to send a proposed resolution to Michigan lawmakers declaring the election to be in dispute, but he sent it to the wrong number. Womp womp. Rudy Giuliani also was the person that Donald Trump chose to replace his campaign lawyers on November 13th with Steve Bannon again, informing another Trump campaign advisor that Trump had replaced them with Rudy Giuliani. Steve Bannon said that he told Trump that without Rudy Giuliani in charge, this thing is over. Bannon added, Trump is in it to the end. Curiouser and curiouser. This case, of course, is going to go away immediately if Donald Trump wins. He can just ask the Department of Justice to scuttle this investigation. This case will never go to trial. But if Donald Trump doesn't win and this case proceeds through the courts, we'll get to learn more about what's at the gist of this. I don't know if they're going to let us know what they've redacted, but more information is sure to come out. Let's take a call. Let's go to Andrew and Gentilly. Andrew, you're on the air. Good afternoon.
Hey, guys. How are you guys doing?
Doing well. How are you today?
I'm good. I'm just calling because your recent callers have talked about a lot about migrants and how they are depleting the coffers of the U.S. and now aid can't go to other U.S. citizens. And that idea is just incredibly ridiculous, noting that how much money the U.S. government makes and how much waste we waste in other areas. How many audits has the U.S. Pentagon failed in a row? I'm reading, I got an article up and it says every day we're sending $25 billion to Israel. So we're sending all this money to foreign areas. And I Wait, get you their said, point hold, that look,
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I want to make sure I understand. You read something that says we're sending $25 billion a day?
Million.
Okay.
I was like, good Lord.
Okay. Well, that's not nothing, but okay.
Sorry. Well, this article came out June 27th, and it's $6.5 billion at that point since October. So the idea that these migrants are coming in and looking for food and water and basic housing and other basic requirements when that is just what people need is just ridiculous, especially when you hear about their stories and what these countries have gone through and how they got to this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an old trick to point at the immigrants, whether they're Haitian or Venezuelan or Mexican or Polish or Irish or Italian, and say they're the drain on the resources. They're the reason that everything sucks. Don't look at the man behind the curtain. It's too easy to scapegoat immigrants. And people will say, well, they shouldn't be here in the first place. And what you're asking for then is for us to restructure completely the way that we handle immigrants in this country. Like the Haitian immigrants in Springfield, Ohio, they have temporary protected status. They are technically legal immigrants. They just didn't swim over here from Haiti and then run up to Springfield, Ohio. They were specifically placed there to help the economy there. The town leaders in Springfield wanted them there. So if your complaint is that FEMA is spending too much money to help these people settle them, then then maybe your argument is that they should have never come here in the first place. Well, then what you're asking for is us just to not take in asylum seekers. And that's not American, I don't think.
I got a question for you.
Sure.
Do you know where the Haiti's National Bank Gold is located?
Where their national what? Their bank?
The National Bank, they had a gold reserve. Do you know where it's currently located?
I'm going to guess that it's here.
It's in Citibank.
Wow.
The U.S. Marines took it in 1919, after we coup their government, and we retook over the National Bank from the French and the Germans, and the bankers, they got checks greater than the infrastructure grants of the whole nation.
Wow, that's nuts. Andrew, I got to step away. I'm late, but I enjoyed speaking with you. Thanks very much for calling, and call back anytime. We will catch up again at 3:10 after the news, and at 3:25, we'll talk to this guy from the mortuary about haunted houses. Here's some Creed, rock and roll. Just a minute left here before we hand it over to Chris Milner, our news department, but I did want to let you know, because I mentioned it earlier today, former Colorado County Clerk Tina Peters has been sentenced to 9 years for election tampering. Wow. Reading now from ABC News, Peters was convicted for giving an individual affiliated with the MyPillow guy access to election software that she used for her county. She was found guilty of most charges of election tampering and misconduct. The district judge said, "Your lies are well documented. These convictions are serious. I'm convinced you would do it all over again if you could. You're as defiant as a defendant as this court has ever seen. You abused your position. You're a charlatan who used and is still using your prior position in office to peddle a snake oil that's been proven to be junk time and time again." There is a not insignificant chance that a future judge will be saying the exact same thing to Donald Trump and his allies. We'll be back after this.